KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at khum.com.
Coastal Currents. It's a weekly feature here, and it is brought to you by the fine people at Staff Cocotat, also Bayside Garden Supply. Big thanks to them. Garden Gate, Singing Tree, awesome. Top to bottom, good folks. And here in the studio, somebody who can, who has a sparkly bike, I think we can say that, Jessica Hall.
Yes.
You are a bike commuter.
I can be.
You can be. I like your bike.
Thank you.
It was nice to see that you had sparkles on it.
Yes, I like to have a fun bike.
I feel like bikes are not so precious that they cannot be decorated enthusiastically.
I think that you should really express yourself with your bike.
Yeah, and you're going to have the bike for a while, too. It's not like a laptop's going to be 2-3 years, like you might want to resell it, you know. So you're not going to cover it in stickers, even though I did. But sticker your bikes up, folks.
Yeah, totally.
Be like Jessica.
Put a Baykeeper sticker on your bike.
Put a Baykeeper sticker on it.
Oh my God, Mike, can I just tell you that that was the most eerie bike ride I've ever been on last night?
Oh yeah, you rode back from Manila to Bayside.
Yeah.
I told you that ride was going to be scary, right?
In the pitch dark, yep.
In the fog.
In the fog.
She's like, I won't ride my bike on the bridge because it's lit.
That's not why.
Oh, that's true. All right, well, it's my understanding, Jessica Hall, that today we're going to talk about, this is the action-packed episode of Coastal Currents.
Yeah, we've got a whale chaser with us today.
And not just any whales.
Killer whales.
Let's introduce our orca chaser.
All right. Well, we are really pleased to have Jeff Jacobson here in the studio with us today. I probably don't have all the stats on the bio, but he is an assistant professor at HSU in oceanography.
Biology.
And he chases orcas. I mean, there's probably a better way of saying that, but
orca chasing.
I just like calling it orca chasing. So, Jeff, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
I did a master's degree years ago in the 70s up to 80 on killer whales that lived in northern Vancouver Island. So I floated around in a little deflatable boat, a Zodiac.
Deflatable boat?
Yeah, they're filled with air.
Yeah, but it's like a half full, half empty thing. We call them inflatable boats.
Yeah, we're realistic. We patch these things.
Okay, fair enough. We're off to a rocky start already, Jeff. Please go for it.
Anyway, it was just a wonderful time to spend all summer long, 3 months a year, watching these little families of killer whales grow up, have their own babies, get to know them as individuals, and that's kind of how I started as a marine mammalogist, whale chaser all over the world, and then went off to many years of humpback whale research in Mexico and up here, do a variety of things, working on gray whales now, and when the call comes out that there's killer whales in the area, try to head out there in the boat and identify them, record their sounds.
Right. So, if I may, Mike, I had this picture that when you say going out there in the boat, that you're talking about something big like the Coral Sea. What kind of boat are you actually following the orcas in?
Well, we're in the lifeboat, and wherever we go out, we're in a 19-foot rigid-hulled inflatable, it's called. It's got an aluminum hull and tubes, inflatable tubes on it, made by Bill Wing.
Cool.
Wing Inflatables.
Yeah.
Nice.
Bill and I worked on this thing in the early 90s and built it in 92. It was the prototype boat for their line of aluminum-hulled inflatables.
They make sturdy boats over there at Wing.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
So you do this now. It seems like you're semi-pro in terms of orca chasing. Like, because you work with NOAA, but you'd be out there anyway, huh? Because you just dig it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about orcas for a sec, because it's, by the way, if you go over to khum.com, you can see a picture of an orca that had washed up on Centerville Beach. You took that photograph about 6 years ago.
About, yeah.
Let's start with that. Like, what happens when an orca washes up in Northern California? How does that phone tree look?
Well, whoever finds it would call any agency in the area, and they would know to go directly to the stranding network that's based at Humboldt State University, the Vertebrate Museum in particular, and that holds the permit for going out and collecting specimens off of anything dead that comes up. If it's live, you call Crescent City and they rescue it. And from that point on, it's amazing the different directions it'll go and how long it'll take to dig a story out of a whale that came up on the beach, how it died, what population it belonged to, etc. in this case, we were able to take a picture of the dorsal fin and the saddle patch, that pale area right behind the dorsal fin, and identify it as a whale that had been seen, comparing photographs. She'd been seen in Monterey Bay on several occasions traveling with a bunch of other killer whales.
So you have sort of like a shorthand knowledge of many, if not all, of the whales that travel up and down the West Coast?
Okay, shorthand. And collaborative in that it takes a lot of us taking pictures and comparing those pictures to put the story of a whale's life together, if you
now,
will.
I've seen grays and that sort of thing. I mean, even not blue whales, but like pilot whales, like the kind of whales that we get. I've seen a few of those, but I've never seen an orca. I've never seen a dorsal. How common is it for these things to be cruising just off our shore?
They're probably out there a lot more than we realize, and so the question really is, how often do we see them?
How often do we see them?
Pretty rarely, in a lot of cases, and. How many times people actually see them and then report them, so that the scientific community can get a sense of that. The local fishing group on the Humboldt Tuna Fisher dot, they've got a blog, and the guy posted a picture of killer whales that cruised by while he was out there tuna fishing. And off we went. We were able to match that photo to one of the most sighted killer whales, who always travels with his mom, you know, along this coast.
Let's talk about that documentary that was on CNN. Surely you've heard about this.
Blackfish.
In Blackfish, which I have not seen because I'm terrified, they say that the killer whale has two emotional centers, right? One for itself and then one for its pod. And I thought, well, that is news to me. Can you talk about that? Is that true? Am I getting it right?
They might have been referring to some quotes by Laurie Marino, who studied the brains of the killer whales. And the part of our brains that are involved in sociality, a sense of self and empathy, awareness of how the others see the world and group cohesion, basically overcome your animal instincts to kill each other when you're mad at someone, but to stick together for the good of the tribe, is even more highly developed in killer whales than it is in most any other mammal, certainly more than us. So I think her statement was something, they may have a group mind, a group sense, that's extraordinary.
Yeah, and they, from what I've heard, in Blackfish, they talk about when SeaWorld needs an orca, right? The story is basically they will go and they will find it and they will trap it and then they will put it in the boat and then the pod just hangs out at the boat like, hey guys, that's one of ours. Let's work something out, and then, you know, sort of orca tears are shed, and then the boat drives away. Is that, again, I heard this secondhand, so is that kind of accurate?
Yeah, do see it. It's great, and really well done, and way overdue. They're highly social animals. Everything is centered around the pod. They're the only mammal we know of where the boys and girls stay with their mom until death do them part. Every other mammal, the boys usually leave.
I'm out of here.
Yeah. And
I did that. Did you do that?
Yeah.
Seems yes.
Like. So are you saying that the whales are mama's boys?
Yeah, that's the subtitle. We wrote a fun little song once about mama's boys, but how do you get a date if you're a mama's boy?
Yeah, how does that work out?
That's a good point.
When different families get together, different mamas get together, the sons of those mamas go and chase around the moms and sisters of the other moms.
So there's a little Mrs. Robinson action going on as well?
Okay.
Like Orca Lolita stuff?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it's, you know.
This got weird fast.
Yeah, it did.
We're talking about orca chasing, and we've got Jeff Jacobson here. He's assistant faculty over at HSU. He also works with NOAA, and he goes out in little boats to see big, big, big fish. Let's talk about K-25. What is K-25?
K-25 is a member of the salmon-eating form of killer whales on this coast.
And K-25 is an individual orca.
Correct. K for the family group or pod, K-pod, and number 25.
That's cool. There's a radio station in Crescent City called K-pod.
Isn't there a movie?
Did you know that?
Called K-pod?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think
anyway, I'm sorry. So K-25.
Extraterrestrials. Well,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
whales.
Yeah. Kevin Spacey.
Oh, okay. And so that's the numbering system of this guy, and a satellite tag was placed on his dorsal fin. And to find out where these whales go during the winter. They're in Puget Sound, Salish Sea, all summer long, back and forth, and they're probably the best known, best observed group of killer whales in the world.
The K-pod. Okay.
The JK and L pods, those three.
Those are like, because they have social skills, because they don't mind going close to the surface, like what makes them the most known pods?
Because they go where there's lots of people, they're following salmon that are migrating up the Fraser River into British Columbia.
Okay. Are they cool? Have you ever, like, when you see a K-pod whale, are you like, oh, dude, autograph time? Or is it just so routine for you?
It's never routine. There is a routine to it, but it's still, wow, each time. And there's rules to follow, how to join in with a group and whatnot. And it's all under permit, so that's you're allowed to approach them and follow behind or alongside and take your pictures. And if you break those rules, like social animals have rules, and these guys, your little dance with them as you're studying them, if you transgress that, they'll let you know.
Oh, yeah. And that has been highly documented.
Yeah,
and that often gets tragic fast. I want to talk to you about that in a sec, but let's localize here. It's Coastal Currents, Jessica Hall and Jeff Jacobson. There was an orca versus whale. Orca versus seal or sea lion event up in the Trinidad area a couple years ago.
Right, I heard about that. My neighbor had been kayaking in the bay, and some friends are coming back from Murrelet survey and got photos of those animals. Apparently, the killer whales chased a harbor seal up on the beach, or was on the beach. Indian Beach, right at the base of the lighthouse there. The guys at the boat launch saw it all and dragged it and brought it big in the water, brought the seal into the water, and the kids were playing with it and whatnot. And to my understanding, that's the first time, or one of the very few times, that the behavior of stranding yourself on a beach as a whale, killer whale, and grabbing prey and pulling it in the water has ever been observed in this part of the world.
Yeah, I remember that being a big biology story. Did you hear it, Jessica? You were living in Southern California.
I was in another place, time continuum.
You were busy saving creeks.
Yeah.
Daylighting creeks. But no, I remember like all the marine bio nerds were, they were all turned up about this thing. Like they were close to throwing parties that weekend just because of the rarity of seeing an orca in Northern California jump up onto a beach, snatch a snack, and then jump back in the water.
Right.
You ever see that?
Nope.
If you did though, that would make your year, right?
Oh, and then some.
I've got years made right there.
The closest I've been to that is off Crescent City a couple years ago now, a couple falls. I was watching 12 gray whales foraging right off Point St. George, and all of a sudden the gray whales started putting their bellies in the air and flipping their flukes around. And it took me a while to realize, oh, there's killer whales in there. And this group of whales came in out of quote-unquote nowhere.
Orca.
Uh-huh. And scared the bejesus out of these gray whales. Don't think they bit any. And
why would the gray whales flip over?
To put their bellies, their most delicate part, up into the air and give their backs to their toughest part to the killer whales.
Oh, wow.
So it's a standard, humpbacks do it. A lot of whales, as soon as they detect a killer whale, bam, their belly goes up near the surface and they protect themselves.
So this movie Blackfish, which again has given, you know, the orca situation a lot of light in recent weeks. How do you feel about SeaWorld? Do you go there? Do you tell people it's fine to go there or it's not fine to go there? Because the way that they get their orcas, at least as portrayed in Blackfish, is dubious at best.
Yeah. To put it all in one word, they're evil.
SeaWorld?
Yeah.
Let's go into that for a second. Like, what? I mean, people look at me all funny when I'm like, yeah, I don't really dig zoos. I mean, for me, zoos teach more than one lesson, one of which is it's okay to do that to a sentient being, right? But I get a little extreme on that end. But I mean, I think the SeaWorld case makes the line between common sense and morality invisible. You know what I mean? I didn't articulate that very well. Like, to me, describe to people how SeaWorld gets their orcas. Let's start there.
The documentary does a good job at showing the history of the captures. And the whole study of killer whales up on this coast began to figure out how many killer whales were out there when they were capturing them along Vancouver Island. And it turns out there were very few of them. You just see them over and over again. So they would go string a net around the whales, chase them really hard, and then take the young ones out and put them in a tank. Well, that whole operation was stopped by the law, and so they had to go elsewhere and could only import from other ocean areas, so they would support other ocean SeaWorld tank kind of places, and that would capture them, hold them, and then they would import them, but they were still capturing live animals. Now their whole thing is based on captive breeding, and Tilikum is the main sperm donor for that, that star of this show that's now killed three people.
Yeah, so Tilikum is this whale that, as you said, killed three people, all trainers, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And the trainers seem to be well-intended individuals, right? They don't seem evil.
No, they love the animals. They've got this incredible relationship with them. And it's a whiff, because you can't stand on the nose of a killer whale as it leaps out of the water and then jump off without that killer whale training you how to do it. And one of the beautiful parts of Blackfish is the interviews with four or five trainers. And they're speaking from their hearts and minds and, you know, telling the truth.
And yet, every now and then, that same whale will kill a person.
Yes.
Is that like chase drive in dogs? Like when dogs see a car, there's just like a switch that flips and go, I must get that. Is that what's happening with the whales? Or is this what you were talking about when the whales are trying to send a message to their captors, companions, whatever you want to call them, saying like, you crossed the line and I'm going to let you know.
Yeah, that's about it. They're very rule-based animals. You go into their world, you play by their rules. And if that means dragging you underwater, because maybe that's the game they play with each other, you behave or I'll not let you come to the air to breathe.
And yet this one killer whale, literal killer whale, you said is the sperm donor for captive breeding.
Right, SeaWorld.
That seems unwise.
They don't release their breeding records. In the movie, there's a quick family tree that you see of all that. It's worth more study, but they don't have that many males. They have more females, and they move them around a lot in order to accomplish breeding, and that breaks up family groups, and the animals get all stressed out. They're hyperactive kids, and so you put that whale in a circumstance where he's frustrated and angry, whatever, and he'll do what he did. And she does a really good job in the movie presenting one very plausible viewpoint from the whale of how it was that in the circumstance with that last trainer that he killed, that...
What was her name?
Dawn.
Yeah. Yeah, is it Dawn something?
Yeah.
And you could still go see him. Like,
You can.
Yeah, you can
go to
pay
Florida.
Money and go see this whale that eats people. That's unsettling. It's not just me. You guys are looking at me like, wow, Mike, you went off the deep end. That's a little weird, right?
Well, actually, what I'm thinking about, Mike, is more what is the lifespan of these captive bred whales? I mean, there's obviously a degraded quality of life. Does it reflect in their lifespan?
Yes. We know really, really well from the wild studies that killer whales, females will live at least 80 years.
Oh, wow.
Males, 60 years. They become sexually mature pretty much the same time we do. So
it's
they're
like us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And 18-month gestation, but other than that, no twins. They're really like us, and they're the acme predator out there. Everything in the ocean is terrified of killer whales.
Even some stuff that's not in the ocean, also terrified of killer whales.
So we're
over time at this point, but this has been a really interesting discussion. Before we wrap it up, Jeff Jacobson, what is next? Like, how do you need help? How do you choose who goes out on boats with you? Like, what is your plan here on the North Coast, and how do you sustain it?
Well, I go out usually working with contract, and I'm specialized in the acoustics of animals, so I'm testing hydrophone gear out there and simple stuff. There's a lot of stuff really close here. We've actually got some funding from SeaWorld to go out and monitor killer whales along this coast between Monterey and Washington. So that little bits and pieces come in, and it's enough.
You get money from SeaWorld, but you also call them evil.
A friend of mine who studies them locally through Hub SeaWorld has got a grant to do it. It seems hypocritical. Hypocrisy is way too easy to find these days, you know? And so, I'm helping her out with the IDs. Now, what can help tremendously all along this whole coast is there's a lot of fishermen out there who are very aware of what's going on and bring in really excellent sightings and reports. There's posters all up and down the whole coast for a hotline of where to report killer whale sightings. And that little story, even a little picture as the whale passes by your boat, if you can snap a picture, can give you a whole story of the life history of this animal and the three different ecotypes of killer whales that are out there, etc. It's a huge, wonderful, amazing topic.
It seems that way. It really does. And as you said, they're so intelligent, there must be really cool backstories on some of these whales.
All of them.
Well, Jessica Hall?
Before we end Coastal Currents, I got two quick things. This discussion about killer whales is reminding me that for Ocean Night, I believe it's tomorrow night, is also, we're showing a movie about whales, not killer whales, but about a warm and fuzzy relationship between humans and whales.
That's right. I heard it would be good for the kids.
Yes. So we encourage people to come out and enjoy that movie. A lot of our movies are about more serious topics, and so when we have a happy one,
come on out.
Come on. Well, come out to the depressing ones, too.
Good time.
Yeah, but let's call them informational. But come out. This is going to be a fun one. The other thing is, anybody who's noticed with the tides these last couple days, we are in our king tides.
King season.
We're the first month of king tides. In December, we are going to be asking for the volunteers to come out again and take photos of the king tides, which will be, I think, the first week of December. And I'll follow up in a future episode with
high water.
Yeah,
high
all that water. Information.
Kayakers love it.
Yeah.
All right, well, this has been super fun, and it sounds like your world is mighty interesting, Jeff Jacobson.
Yeah, we're all feeling a little envious.
Yeah.
Oh, there are days we're not envious, but it's wonderful. It's amazing. Yeah. Wow. No doubt.
Good stuff.
Thanks very much, and I guess people can take your class and read your work and Google your name and find all kinds of information. And do check out the picture at khum.com of the whale washed up on Centerville Beach. That's a big one.
Yeah, we have its complete skeleton at Humboldt State. So, in a box, we'll articulate it one of these days.
Do you ever take it home on, like, Christmas break and just play with it? Like, see if you can rebuild it from memory?
I got x-rays of its pectoral fin. I love looking at that.
You are a nerd, man. Fantastic.
That needs to go up on the web somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, please do.
I can send it, yeah.
That'd be sweet.
That'd be awesome.
All right, well, that's going to do it for Coastal Currents, you guys. Let's play a song, actually. Do you know the song People Got a Lot of Nerve? It's by Nico Case.
I will very soon.
You will very soon. And it is about... it was written right after that the most recent SeaWorld trainer was attacked, and I think that's the way we're going to go out. So this is Nico Case on KHUM, Radio Without the Rules.
This has been a KHUM production. For more information, check out khum.com or search KHUM in iTunes.